Thank you for joining today's conference call. I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Ford, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. Today, we'll be talking about climate change, its impact on businesses, and the Trump administration's climate and energy policy proposals. We are pleased to welcome Congressman Scott Peters from California, a former economist at the EPA and San Diego Port Commissioner. After his remarks, there'll be time for questions and comments about your company's experiences with climate change and any other recommendations you have for the Congressman. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Ford organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 local business leaders across America. At these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, small business owners, and executives get the chance to brief policymakers on issues affecting their businesses and how Washington can work with business to accelerate our economy. To date, more than 500 senior administration officials, members of Congress, governors, and mayors have participated in our programming, and this is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, this call is on the record, and there may be reporters on the call. Second, there'll be time for you to ask questions and share your advice. You can do this in one of two ways. You can press 1 at any time to ask your question live, or you can email it to us at info@businessfwd.org. That's info@businessfwd.org. When we call on you to ask a live question, please introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. Again, you can press 1 to ask your question live or send the question to info@businessfwd.org. And finally, the EPA will be holding hearings next Tuesday here in Washington to hear from business leaders about climate change and the Trump administration's climate energy policy proposals. We encourage all of you, if you have a moment, please send us an email with any comments or recommendations or questions you have. We'll include it in our submission to the EPA. We know most of you are a little busy with your day jobs and don't have time to come to Washington or submit it in writing. What we'd love to do is make it easier for you to submit a case study, make a recommendation, and we're here to help. So we'll have some instructions about that later today. Now let's get started. Please welcome Congressman Scott Peters.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the chance to be on the call. What I thought I'd do is just maybe talk for about 5 minutes about my background and what I'm seeing, and then we can have a larger conversation. One of my top priorities in Congress, I represent San Diego, Coronado, and Poway, which are very nonpartisan kind of areas. I'm trying to build a bipartisan consensus around common sense policies that would help reduce emissions that contribute to climate change and damage our environment. I've long believed that we don't have to choose between a prosperous economy and a clean environment, and I worked on that basis on the City Council in San Diego and as a port commissioner, where we started the first climate action plan along with our businesses around the port to address challenges on rising sea levels. I did spend time as an economist in the Office of Toxic Substances before I went to law school, and spent 15 years as an environmental lawyer working in large firms and small firms, and at one point running my own firm. And a lot of what I did was compliance for companies. And I want to tell you that I understand, too, that regulations can be a burden on businesses, especially small businesses. For business owners taught me, my clients taught me that time is money, and often, no is the second best answer. Any answer is better than having to wait. So I also believe it's our job as lawmakers to create regulations that achieve high standards, but don't do it without imposing unnecessary burdens, and always to provide certainty. On the other hand, President Trump seems to believe that you have to choose between protecting the environment and supporting strong economic growth. He believes that regulations are responsible for how our energy economy is changing, not the market or innovation. I think that's generally wrong. And I don't support the MEAT Act's approach he's taken to climate and environmental regulations. We need smart, evidence-based policies that are based on input from experts and stakeholders alike, and so that's one of the reasons I'm pleased that you're all on the call. In the joint address in Congress, President Trump said he wanted to work with members of both parties to promote clean air and clean water. But he's taken on the Clean Power Plan. He's attacked it, and in this one-sided attack, he's already gone back on his word. He's taken a huge step backwards for our environment and for our climate. The Clean Power Plan was the first attempt to reduce emissions from power plants, which are by far the largest emitters of harmful pollution in the country. It would reduce carbon pollution from power plants by 32% by 2030, and was expected to save the American family, average American family, nearly $85 on their energy bills. And I think most people don't understand the benefits of the power plant for savings. It was crafted in a way that we think responsible legislation should be crafted, a responsible policy, input from stakeholders and experts, flexible goals for states, localities, and utilities. It incentivized innovation in clean energy technology, doesn't put the burden on the middle class, and set long-term goals with a clear benefit for public health. The executive order, unfortunately, would begin unwinding that plan, and it's going to take our energy economy backwards at a time when we should be embracing the energy solutions of the future and making sure that those jobs stay and grow in America. He's mistaken in believing that he can bring the energy sector jobs back as the market moves toward a clean energy economy. I think he's made a lot of coal miners, and he's gotten a lot of political benefit out of that. But it wasn't the EPA that hurt coal. It was the low price of natural gas. It's a market issue. And it's notable that numerous voices in the private sector, including oil and natural gas producers, have even questioned his actions on the clean power plan. The other thing in the executive order was an elimination of guidance for federal agencies to use the social cost of carbon in their rulemaking and permitting process. So that's the monetary estimate of how much increases in the carbon dioxide emissions would harm the economy and cost the economy. According to the EPA, the damage can come in a number of ways: decline in net agricultural productivity, human health, property damages from flood risks. The military and the private sector and the scientific community are all in agreement that carbon emissions do cost us. The social cost of carbon was a pragmatic tool to measure that harm, but unfortunately, President Trump has made it harder for communities to know how federal rules and projects could affect public health and sustainability. So with both of these policies on social cost of carbon and the Clean Power Plan, Trump's taken a meat axe to clean air and water protections without offering an alternative vision for how he's going to protect our environment and move the energy production into the future. So over the next couple of weeks, the EPA is going to be holding hearings pursuant to the executive order under this new regulatory reform task force. And they want to hear from stakeholders on which regulations should be repealed, replaced, or modified. And we know that Secretary Pruitt made his name looking to sue the EPA. So we know kind of what we're up against, and he's going to line up his allies to make the case to undo scores of regulations. And that could imperil even the most basic protections for clean air and water. So we know that also that Pruitt can't eliminate the rules unilaterally, either the Clean Power Plan or the broader regulations. We do want to provide input to him on how we can make those regulations achieve high standards without a great burden. But we don't want to just throw the baby out with the bathwater. So it's really important that it's not just activists and Democratic lawmakers making the case for clean air and water. We need our private sector partners like you all to help to make your voices heard and to reject this extreme approach. And we really hope that you recognize the very, very significant effect that calls and letters from business leaders can have, because your testimony carries a lot of weight, and we'd like you to participate. So I think working together, we can move toward real regulatory reform that reduces the burden on small businesses, provides the certainty that businesses deserve, but also maintain a high standard for clean air and clean water. And so, Jim, I'd be happy to engage in a conversation, but that's kind of what I wanted to get off my chest.
Thank you very much, Congressman. The most common question we get in the briefings we've done on with the EPA or the Energy Department is always how expensive are these regs for business? And before we get to questions, just wanted to share some research the Business Forward has done in the past. Congressman is right. Both electricity rates and bills are going to would drop in the long term with the Clean Power Plan. But in the near term, the first 5 years, there is a period which the rates are expected to rise slightly. EPA, which has a good history on these cost estimates, estimates that costs could increase about 3%. To put that into context, companies spend less than 1% of their total budgets on electricity, which means if you multiply less than 1% of your costs by 3%, what you're looking at is CPP causing a short-term increase of your bottom line of 0.03%. Or if you have a $100 product, it would increase the cost of production by about 3 cents. So that's one of the most common questions, and we wanted to give you the answer. By comparison, what we found in these briefings is that climate change is having an impact on commodity prices, on supply chains, on plants and equipment, and on consumer demand. And just to give you an example, we did a lot of work with restaurant owners around the country, and what we found is the CPP would increase the cost of their delivering a meal by about a penny. But in the last 5 years, their food prices have gone up for that meal by $1.63 because of severe weather in California mostly. This puts it in comparison. So you can have a 1% impact on your restaurant meal, 1 cent impact on your restaurant meal, or a $1.63 impact on food prices. That's what we're looking at. We'll open up for your questions and comments. If you have a question, please press 1 to speak live on the call, or you can email your question to info@businessfwd.org. Please remember to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. First question we have is an email question, and it is relates to it's from Megan Hansen from South Bend, Indiana, and it is it relates to Paris. If the Trump administration somehow eliminates the Clean Power Plan, how does that affect our commitment to the Paris Agreement? Can we still hit our targets?
Or is that addressed to me?
Yes, Congressman.
Sure. You know, it's the Paris Agreement is kind of multivariate, and some of it's a business commitment, some of it's a national commitment. It's not clear exactly how you'd withdraw from it, but you know, I think I would say I'd make two observations. One is that much of the clean energy revolution is not driven by the government; it's driven by the markets. You see the cost of renewables relatively. Declining quite a bit, becoming much more competitive on the market. So that's of some comfort. And also I think that, unfortunately, though, that it would take us out of the leadership role that we've established and potentially put us at a disadvantage in terms of taking advantage of the job growth that's happening in the renewable sector. I do think that... If we don't stick by the Paris commitments as kind of amorphous and almost non-binding as they're more like guidelines, I think it would provide less of an incentive for us to hit our targets. Sure, of course.
Thanks. I'm sorry, Congressman, I was on mute there. Our first caller is Mark Carr from Illinois. Mark, you're on the line.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, but going back to the social cost of carbon, when they established the cost years ago, the EPA would not accept the evidence that increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere aids agricultural production. They just didn't address it at all, although quite a bit of testimony was put forward. And so folks on that side think that the multi-trillion dollar increases in agricultural productivity over the past period that are not attributable to improved genetics and are not attributable to better agricultural practices actually lower the social cost of carbon and possibly make it a positive. And so I'm wondering how the justification works for federal agencies under the past administration when the evidence is picked and choose to potentially bolster a pre-established policy position.
I can't I would not be able to comment on that exact analytical process. I would say, first of all, that it's appropriate to attempt to quantify the costs or the economic effect of carbon emissions. We just had a panel at the department or at the Energy Subcommittee where I think all the economists were in agreement that that was the right process. What you're talking about is maybe the failure to account for one of the effects, and I would certainly suggest that I would agree that if for some reason there was part of the effect that wasn't accounted for, that would be wrong. That should go into the calculus. I don't think that removes the need to do the exercise. And then on food production, I would also say that we know that I'm not disagreeing with you. I just don't have enough information, but I know that from a food supply perspective, one of the concerns about climate change is that drought has made food production in a lot of places more difficult. So I do think that it's apparent that there are a number of costs. I think it's appropriate to consider all the factors when you determine what that cost is, but the failure to do that in terms of making the calculation doesn't obviate the need to make such a calculation and account for it in policy.
And Mark, this is Jim Doyle with Business Forward. We've done programming with Risky Business, you're probably already familiar with their work and the impact on how crop choice could be affected and how Ohio's loss is Michigan's gain. We're happy to put you send you materials about that that shows the trade-offs on agriculture. But they've actually done work that shows which regions of the country could benefit from in terms of agriculture and which ones lose. So we'll forward that to you. Our next caller is LaRonda Bowen from California. LaRonda, you're on the line.
Hi, thank you. I'm with the California Air Resources Board, and the Clean Power Plan is obviously of great interest to us. But I work a lot on small and mid-sized businesses, and I'm wondering if you're hearing any discussion or deliberation about the impact on small businesses of the plan, because when we talk to our counterparts across the states, there seems to be the consensus that ultimately small businesses who will benefit because they'll be able to reduce not only their costs, but if the California model holds up, then many other states will have incentive programs which encourage businesses to change their business practices and use ENERGY STAR equipment, very low-cost activities that they can take. But we've seen over the years that businesses of all sorts go through our Cool California plan, win awards, et cetera, and they're saving money, and that's what's bringing the small businesses to the table when there's no regulation. They're not required to do anything. So I just wonder if anybody has heard if anyone is raising the small business piece of it, because I know it's something that's often left off the table.
I'm going to let Jim answer that. You don't have any trouble convincing me that California's innovation in this area has been we've seen a lot of prosperity over the last decade. It doesn't seem to have interfered with business. But I know Jim's got some more specifics on those effects.
Well, actually, what we're interested in talking about is what we'd love to do is do more programming in California because between the producers and the companies that are buying renewable energy, it's interesting. But if you'd like to do some more program, if you'd like to do work with us on a future event, we'd love to work with you on it. Our next question is, we've already covered a little bit, but it's from Alice Hill from Denver, Colorado. If the Trump administration decreases clean energy technology investments, how will it affect the U.S.'s position as a global leader?
Well, I mean, I think. there's a lot of areas in which I think America's been leading the world that the Trump administration seems inclined to withdraw from, whether it's trade or defense and now climate. And I think we should be leading this effort. I don't think that Other countries are going to feel confident to respond, even though we know the benefits of this, if the United States is not. And I also think, you know, we may be depriving ourselves of the benefits of some of the economic opportunities that this energy revolution offers. So I think it's a pretty serious thing, and I hope that as you correspond with people in letters and phone calls, that you express that concern.
Congressman, this next question may actually be a little out of your wheelhouse too, and if so, we can we'll pull the data here at Business Forward and provide it. But it's from Paul Bailey from La Habra, California. Each state is allowed to come up with its own plan for EPA. Some have an easier time than others. And I'm sorry, I'm having trouble reading this right now. Is there any reason why pulling out of the Clean Power Plan would affect each state? Whether states can continue on with the plans that they have, even if the Clean Power Plan gets pulled?
Sure, I mean, California is an example of a state that's really gone out ahead of everybody else. And what I liked about President Obama's approach was that he let each state make its own plan and at least take the first cut at it before the federal government brought, you know, a heavy-handed approach, you know, kind of one-size-fits-all was the fear of everyone. I thought the Clean Power Plan did that nicely. But, you know, obviously every state's empowered to make its own efforts. I just think obviously we're better off doing it together and a lot stronger together.
Our next caller is Andrew Munger from Pennsylvania. Andrew, you're on the line.
Yes, thank you. I'm a small businessman, just doing a startup in the energy efficiency area. And I think we shouldn't ignore, when we're talking about climate change, that reduction in energy demand is the low-hanging fruit. That's really the easiest way to tackle the problem. Now, there are two main drivers that I see of energy efficiency. One is innovation, and innovation is spurred by quite a number of department expenditures, but especially DOE and EPA. And I've just come back from a very, very good event that NREL organized in Denver, Colorado last week, which is doing a fantastic job at promoting innovation. And the other driver for improving efficiency is regulations. Regulations actually have a positive effect on competitiveness. By increasing efficiency standards, we are actually improving America's technology and making us more competitive in the international market. So regulations are also, of course, protect consumers, but we mustn't forget that regulations have a positive effect. Thank you.
Yeah, regulations can help make markets too. And in terms of innovation, I'll just point out that one of the targets on the chopping block for the budget is basic research in energy. We had a hearing on modernizing the grid, which has a big role in both the reliability but also the efficiency of the electric system. And I asked some of the companies that were represented, what's the federal role, because so much interesting and productive innovations going on the private side. They said they just needed research support, and a lot of those companies can't do the basic research while they have to worry about quarterly profits. Federal government plays a big role in that, and we don't want to cut off that funding either. It's certainly been a benefit to us in the past.
Our last question is an email from Joanne Gutowski from Troy, Michigan, and she has a question about the affordable clean energy points that have been made, and she says, haven't government subsidies don't your cost estimates include government subsidies that we should be pulling out if we want to if these are really cost competitive? actually, Congressman, we've actually done some research on that, so I can start off. Every type of energy is subsidized by the federal government in one way or another at pretty much every level since 1950. Taxpayers have spent about $1 trillion on gas and oil and solar and wind and nuclear. We do it because of energy security, and we do it to keep energy affordable, and it involves everything from $30 billion spent on R&D to find see if there are ways to make coal cheaper, safer, or cleaner, helping pay for shipping tankers that take petroleum and natural gas from our harbors out to export around the world. So, yes, there are about $1 trillion of government subsidies out there in the market, and that affects the price of every bit of energy. Most recently in the last 5 years, clean energy has been getting more than its share as a percentage of total energy. So there has been a big boost in spending on renewable energy, but in the scheme of things, it pales in comparison. Joanne, I'll be sending you the report that we did, so that way you have that information.
That'd be helpful for me too, Jim. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, that's all the time we have for. If you have questions or if you think of one later, or please send it to info@businessfwd.org. And if you're interested in submitting a case study, questions, comments to the EPA, pro CPP, anti CPP, we don't care. We'll present it to the EPA on your behalf. Please press 5, and we'll. We'll reach out to you, and then Mark from Illinois, I'll be sure to get you that information from Risky Business, just because the points you make about agriculture are important, and it's a great resource. You may find it interesting. Congressman, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And again, if you have any questions or comments or case studies that you'd like to send to the EPA and you don't have time, please press 5, or you can just email it to us at info@businessfwd.org. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, Jim. Take care, everybody.